This week's surveillance report covers OpenAI's plan to prioritize potentially sponsored content in your answers in ChatGPT. What to do if you're targeted by government spyware, Meta's secret playbook for avoiding scammer accountability. Happy New Year's. I am recording on January 1st, and welcome to the Surveillance Report, your essential weekly tech news delivering deep analysis on the latest threats to security, privacy, and digital freedom, empowering you all to reclaim control and defend your rights. It's a pretty short day today, but still a lot of important juicy stuff. So let's get right into the highlight story. A few weeks ago, I talked about how OpenAI was experimenting in their Android app in kind of a closed beta with ads, like actual ads that you might expect to see on something like Google search results. And a lot of people had some strong opinions about this for obvious reasons, because as of right now, whether or not you like these AI models, they're kind of seen as overall a place to get accurate information. It's supposed to source and cite things and do proper research. And of course, we know that AI has the potential to hallucinate and it's not a perfect tool, but overall, it's supposed to be as accurate as it can possibly be, which isn't quite compatible with the idea of advertising. So they kind of moved away from that. And now I want to be very clear about this. This hasn't been really confirmed and there isn't that much coverage of this yet, but apparently OpenAI is trying to figure out a new form of ads on ChatGPT that they are calling sponsored content, which could influence your buying decisions. What they said is, I'm going to have some quotes here, AI models could prioritize sponsored content to ensure it shows up in ChatGPT responses, the report noted. In recent weeks, ad mockups have included displaying sponsored information in a sidebar next to the main ChatGPT response window, according to the person who has seen them. An OpenAI representative also confirmed that the company is indeed exploring ads. As ChatGPT becomes more capable and widely used, we're looking at ways to continue offering more intelligence to everyone. As part of this, we're exploring what ads in our pocket could look like. People have a trusted relationship with ChatGPT, and any approach would be designed to respect that trust. Now, I think, first off, props to how they are able to somehow spin this as in any way positive to people, because apparently this is offering more intelligence to everyone, which is quite an interesting perspective on rolling out sponsored content inside a place that already should have as much intelligence as it needs. A lot of AI models might just reinforce things you already know. They might not challenge you well enough. And I do encourage any of you, if you do use AI models, to use instructions and anything else in your projects or however you're using AI that actually say, please challenge me. I think that's a really important thing to add to any AI model. And I wish that these companies were doing that. But that's not really what these companies fully want, right? I feel like what is the most beneficial for a company like OpenAI is a person who just takes everything it says at face value, fully listens to it, fully responds to it, is using it all day, and now won't second guess any kind of sponsored content or things that it recommends that you do. So I see that as a pretty concerning pattern here. And, you know, the Bleeping Computer does say here, ads in ChatGPT would disrupt the web economy, as what most people don't understand is that GPT likely knows more about users than Google. And I think that's a pretty important note here. You know, when you're using Google, it already knows a hell of a lot about you, actually. So they might be understating how much Google knows about you here. But I do think ChatGPT just has so much more context. If you're using it all day, putting all of your life through it, now it's going to use all that information to target you with specific things that you might want to purchase. So to summarize my concerns here and what I would have all of you be watching out for, one, the advertising industry, I'm not inherently against it, right? But I am against the fact that it is also data-driven. It is not privacy-respecting. It doesn't respect users. They don't really care about what ads are being run, as we'll talk about with Meta later. They actually are incentivized to run scams. And they don't care about your security. There's a reason why the FBI officially recommended to start using ad blockers. So I have no reason to tell you all not to use ad blockers. I think that is the way to go, just from this perspective alone. But the second thing, and the second reason why this is concerning, is I feel like this is going to reinforce the idea that you shouldn't be questioning, you shouldn't be critically using these tools like ChatGPT, Claude, whatever you're using. They should be used as, at most, maybe a peer and someone that you can challenge back and not someone you just blindly listen to. And I think ChatGPT hardcore leans a lot more into like patting your back and just letting you do whatever you want to do and reinforcing your own beliefs, which isn't, I think, maybe the best thing. And the third thing is kind of the conflict of interest this presents. You know, if you're going to put forward a tool that's meant to be overall as objective as possible and give you quite neutral advice, you can't also have it try to sell you things. That kind of goes against a lot of that. So those are kind of my, you know, three concerns I have. If you're on YouTube or PeerTube, I'd love to hear your thoughts and kind of your concerns with this. I know our audience is going to be pretty opposed to this, but if you're new to this podcast, I'd love to hear your general thoughts on this kind of thing. And stick around, because in a couple stories, I'm going to talk about Meta and their whole relationship with advertising and why I think that should really spell out some of the concerns that the advertising industry might create for something like ChatGPT. Government spyware. How do we know we're targeted by government spyware? And what do we do if we feel like we have been impacted by government spyware? How do we prevent it? And who do we kind of contact, and what resources do we have in that situation? But these are actually stories, because this is all from TechCrunch as of this last week. And so the first story that they talk about, and I'll keep this one quite brief because it isn't, there isn't anything crazy here. They talk about this nonprofit organization called Access Now, and they have a digital security helpline, which if you're watching the video, you can kind of see what this looks like right here. And this article talks about the role that they've played, as we've seen a huge uptick in the amount of government spyware that's implemented against journalists, against dissidents, against anybody who could be seen as an enemy of the government. And this includes companies like NSO Group, Intellexa, or Paragon, all of whom develop, implement, and target and attack people with a lot of the spyware that we've been talking about the last several years. And without diving too deep into it, it's quite interesting to see the geopolitics of it all, because some countries like the US kind of claim to be very against these companies while still utilizing a lot of their technologies, to the point actually where the US sanctioned some of the executives linked to Intellexa, but Trump, like literally 16 hours ago at the time of recording, removed them from the sanctions list. And so it seems like on a week-by-week basis, we have kind of this change of tide on how different governments and countries feel about using this spyware, but it's quite dangerous. Cops and spies in Ethiopia, Greece, Hungary, India, Mexico, Poland, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE, among others, have used sophisticated spyware to compromise the phones of these victims, who at times have also faced real-world violence, being intimidated, harassed, and in extreme cases, even murdered. So first off, if you've received a notification, because Apple and Google and all these companies now are doing a better job of notifying users if they feel like they've been impacted by malware, this is the kind of organization that you can reach out to. And so they even said Apple's generally taking the right approach, even if the optics look like a trillion-dollar tech giant offloading its responsibility to a small team of nonprofit workers. But let's get into more of the technical bits. This article from TechCrunch talks about Jay Gibson when he got an unexpected notification on his iPhone, which said, quote, "Apple detected a targeted mercenary spyware attack against your iPhone." And I just want to stop there. Imagine you get an actual notification on your device that says, yo, you've been targeted by a government, and they may or may not have hacked into your entire phone and have all of your information. I just want people to kind of stop and think about how that would feel for a second and how scary that must be. If you're on the screen, you can actually see what some of these alerts can look like on an iPhone, so you at least know what it looks like. And I do think it's important to mention that these tech giants like Apple and Google, and yes, even WhatsApp, I hate to say it, they do offer these notifications as well. They have full-time security teams that have been hunting, studying, and analyzing this type of malicious activity for years. That's a direct quote from TechCrunch. And if they think that you've been targeted, they might very well be right. Now, I want to start with prevention. There are a couple things here that you should definitely do, but please keep in mind the context of this, which is most of you don't have to worry about this. If you're wondering, do I have to do anything about this? The answer is probably no. This is really reserved for people who are doing any kind of activism, human rights advocacy, journalism. Those are the kind of the situations where maybe I'd say, hey, think a little bit more about this, but even then, these are still overall not that widespread yet. It's not like we see hundreds of thousands of people impacted each year. This is still very expensive to do. So, but first off, if you have a Google account, enable Advanced Protection Program. That is a free program to join, and it's quite easy to do. And in fact, that's just overall what you should do when possible. So Apple has lockdown mode that you can enable. So these are now new tools that we have access to. Well, relatively new as of the last few years, that we have access to that give you pretty much top tier security against even government states, which is pretty impressive. When it comes to Apple, I also recommend enabling advanced data protection, which is end-to-end encryption in iCloud, as long as you're not in the UK, where they've effectively banned that. Thank you, the UK. Of course, use solid, open source, well-reputable privacy and security tools when possible. So use things like Signal when you can instead of maybe Telegram. Also consider other services that have similar programs, like Proton has their Sentinel program, which, yes, is a bit vague and doesn't really describe exactly everything it does. But clearly, there is something that's being toggled there to try to increase the security of your account with a little bit more oversight. In addition to opting into more things, you can also keep your device's operating systems and your apps up to date, and being careful with suspicious links and attachments, restarting your phone regularly, and paying attention to changes in how your device functions. Be careful with that last one. Obviously, you know, things just happen to your devices, and it doesn't mean you're infected with malware, but it is an extra indication if you notice a few red flags. And now the next phase of this is, let's say you suspect something happened, or you just want to be double sure. What can you do to analyze if you've been impacted by something? So TechCrunch goes into things called MVTs. A lot of these are open source and downloadable, and they, again, please check out the show notes so you can get links to these yourself. But these will essentially analyze your phone for you and look for indications of any kind of compromise. Now, if that sounds too complicated, what I personally do is I use iVerify, I-V-E-R-I-F-Y, iVerify. And this is a free app. You can get the free version from the App Store. It's from Trail of Bits. They're a very trusted security organization. And they allow you to do one free monthly scan where you essentially create a diagnostic report on an iPhone or an Android device. And then you upload that to iVerify. And then they scan through that document for you. And they tell you within a few minutes if there's any sign of compromise. Well, it's a pretty easy, convenient way that you can check for this stuff on your device. Another alternative that I haven't tested myself, but I've heard some people have a lot of luck with, is iMazing, I-M-A-Z-I-N-G. This is for desktop. So you would download this on your computer and then you'd plug in your phone. And they have a spyware detection tool and it scans for Pegasus, Predator, King's Pawn, and Operation Triangulation. And so that is another tool that you can use if you prefer desktop. Now, if it does flag something or you already got a notification, it's really important to now reach out to people who can genuinely help you. And so they have Access Now and its digital security helpline, which I already talked about. You can reach out to the Citizen Lab. If you're a journalist, Reporters Without Borders also has a digital security lab. Apparently, this guy named Matt Mitchell, who's a security expert, created a startup called Safety Sync Group, which offers a pretty similar service. We also have Hexordium. And then there's also someone named Kostin Ryu. I hope I pronounced that correctly, but he actually used to work at Kaspersky's global research team. And he just said, yo, just email me directly if you've been impacted by this kind of stuff. And so I wanted to really make this a formal story for SR because I receive emails almost like every month at this point from someone who thinks that they've been impacted by a piece of spyware. They reach out to us. And normally what I have to do is point them to these kind of resources because that's a bit out of our wheelhouse. So hopefully this was a helpful story. And don't forget, we're about to talk about Meta's playbook in avoiding scammer crackdowns by serving you malicious ads. Yes, that is Meta and what they want to do. But before then, I want to talk about the sponsor of this episode, Easy Opt-Outs. Easy Opt-Outs is a data removal tool. They go to those people searching websites that have all the information about you, like your name, your email, your address that you live at, your family members, and all of this different kind of stuff that anybody can look up and search about you online. The problem with a lot of these services is A, they're quite pricey and expensive. B, a lot of them use this spray method where they just send all of your information to every data broker out there and people searching websites and just ask them to remove it, even if they don't already have your information. So now they're just kind of sending your information blindly. Or three, some of these companies are actually owned or partially owned by those people searching websites themselves. So they're double dipping there. Now, the cool thing and what separates Easy Opt-Outs is they're extremely affordable. They're under $20 a year, not a month. And they're just run by a couple guys. They don't have any third-party contractors. They don't have any third-party data analytics. It's just a couple guys who realize they can run a data removal service lean and mean. And they have business plans, and they even offer a refund if you're not happy. So there really is no risk, especially when it's $20 a year. It's hands down the top recommendation I give to friends and family. It's what I also personally use. And I think that it is also well combined with even a manual method if you want to go through the manual method of opting yourself out. Or you can just lean into Easy Opt-Out and do it all automatically. Kind of your call how you want to proceed. Thank you, Easy Opt-Outs, for sponsoring the Surveillance Support. Check them out down in the description to get started for about $20 a year. It really is that simple and that cheap to get yourself removed from these people searching websites. Now, back to Surveillance. Now we talk about Meta, and I feel like I always feel crazy talking to regular people even friends and family sometimes, because they ask why I don't like Facebook so much. And it's because when you actually see behind the scenes how this company operates, there is so little redeeming qualities about it. I can find quite a few redeeming qualities about Google, about Amazon, about Apple. I think Google has a really cool security team. I think they actually have some interesting products that are pretty decent. I think Apple products can be fine, and they do treat privacy a slight bit better than all the other big tech companies. And so there's something to be said there, and I can at least say they can build some good products. I think Apple Silicon is actually pretty crazy and was a whole leap forward for efficiency and performance. I don't think anyone can deny that Amazon has a crazy good customer experience, and it's part of the reason why people really struggle to get rid of Amazon. It's also just kind of prolific, and it has everything you could ever want, like within a 12-hour delivery window. Meta, on the other hand, their entire business model is just keeping you on their platform as long as possible, making you as anxious as possible. They've been found to influence our democracy. They've been found to push malicious advertisements to all of you. Zuckerberg himself has said he wouldn't want his own kids on his own platform. So I hear all these things and I go, so what is redeeming about Meta and Facebook? And I guess Facebook Marketplace is really it. You know, that's the one thing I hear people talk about that's like, okay, yeah, that's a cool thing, but it also came at the cost of somewhat killing Craigslist, because every time I go on Craigslist now, there's like nothing there anymore. So yeah, I'm a little mad about that one too now. But to get off my soapbox, let's get into the actual story, because this is just more Meta stuff. And you know, Meta behind the scenes, they do things like store your passwords in plain text. And then when all your passwords get leaked, they just throw their hands up and go, well, whatever. And then when researchers are able to scrape every single WhatsApp number, you know, billions of people, which means that scammers have probably been able to do that for years. And then Facebook sees that data and says, oh, that's just intentional design. We don't care. That really speaks to Facebook and Meta and their approach to you, their users, and their users' data. They do not care about that. What they do care about is protecting their advertising and protecting their engagement on their platform. That is really what they care about across Instagram, which is owned by Meta, across Facebook, across WhatsApp even, now that WhatsApp is getting ads. And a new story here, I know, Henry, it's a long soapbox. I can really rant about Facebook for a long time, but it's been confirmed now that Meta launched an enforcement blitz to reduce the volume of offending ads, but it also sought to make problematic ads less discoverable for Japanese regulators. Pretty much, Japan said, hey, we have a ton of scams going on through Facebook's ad platform. These are obvious scams, and they ranged from fraudulent investment schemes to fake celebrity product endorsements created by AI and all of this really sketchy crap. And so they investigated and they said, hey, we need to look into this. And Meta feared this, and they thought that Japan would soon force it to verify the identity of all its advertisers. And this is based on internal documents, by the way. This isn't like speculation. It's a bit hard to conceptualize this because these are all tools that only these people have access to. But essentially, they created this tool that was designed to be, and they means Meta. Meta created this transparency tool so that, you know, Japanese regulators could go through and search for Meta's effectiveness at tackling scams. But of course, Meta wouldn't just do this fairly. So what they did is they managed what they called the prevalence perception of scam ads returned by ad library searches. First, they identify the top keywords and celebrity names that Japanese ad library users employed to find the fraud ads. Then they ran identical searches repeatedly and deleted ads that appeared fraudulent from the library and Meta's platforms. What this tactic did is it successfully removed fraudulent advertising of the sort that regulators would want to weed out, but it also served to make the search results that Meta believed regulators were viewing appear cleaner than they otherwise would have. The scrubbing, Meta teams explained in documents regarding their efforts to reduce scam discoverability, sought to make problematic content not findable for regulators, investigators, and journalists. This was an intentional effort. I also want to remind you, also from internally at Facebook, they found that their own platforms are harmful to teen mental health. That was their own research done by their own scientists, and they ignored all these results and made zero changes to the platform. I also want to remind people that Meta's policies played a huge role in the genocide that happened in Myanmar, and they have doubled down on this in 2025 and are keeping a lot of these policies in place. And these are from former Meta employees, and this is a quote, "I really think this is a precursor for genocide. We've seen it happen. Real people's lives are actually going to be endangered." And I think what's so difficult to talk about with companies like Facebook and Meta, and I'll touch on the regulator in Japan stuff in a second, but people just see it and they go, it's just where I connect with family. It's just a social media platform. I just post photos there. It's not a big deal. But what you don't see is all of this stuff happening behind the scenes. It does influence you. It does influence the people around you. It does influence politics. It influences democracy. These are real things. If you believe a single book can change your view on something, or a book in the hands of a society can change society, which is what everyone universally agrees upon, right? I think a lot of people buy self-help books with the idea that it might change their life in some way. And a lot of governments might want to ban books because they know that the books might influence people's view of things. So if that's true, if you spend an hour a day on a platform that's entire goal is to keep you on it as long as possible and is incentivized to push you fake information, why would that not also have an influence on you and the people around you? This stuff is a lot more dangerous than it looks like. And this really is an issue of incentives, because why does Meta not care about these issues? And it really does boil down to profit. When we look at this whole situation going on in Japan, Reuters reported in November that scam ads that Meta considers high risk. So Meta already has decided that these ads that are running and these advertisers are, in air quotes, high risk, but they generate as much as $7 billion with a B in revenue for the company each year. This month, also, the news agency found that Meta tolerates rampant fraud from advertisers in China, which also safeguards billions in revenue. There's a lot more context I encourage all of you to read in the Reuters article in the show notes if you want to learn a lot more about this story and a little bit more of Meta's history and how this is not just a one-time thing. This is a consistent pattern over many years. But the main take-home message I want to send you all is that Meta has no incentive to care about this. They'll continue doing whatever is necessary to keep pushing harmful things to all of you, because ultimately that's what they're incentivized by. They're incentivized to keep you on their platforms as long as possible, and they're incentivized to not lose the billions in revenue that they make from fraudulent advertising. Yes, this is literally what Meta is saying. If you're a scammer and you're out there and you want to scam hundreds of millions of people and you want instant access to those people, use Meta's advertising platform, because they don't care what you do as long as you pay them money and they make enough money from you. That's okay. When you log into Facebook and you log into any Meta platform, including WhatsApp or Instagram, just remember that you are logging into a platform that doesn't care who serves you what kind of content or what kind of safety is behind it. As long as they make money from it, they'll serve it to you right on the platter. I apologize if I was a little bit too ranty on that one. Even when I had Nate on the podcast for surveillance support, it was still very difficult for me to control my rage anytime I cover a really nasty Meta Facebook story. So thank you all for listening. And I would love to hear your thoughts as well. If any of you think I'm overreacting or underreacting, because I'd be curious to see. So it was the holidays, so our digital rights bulletin this week is a little bit smaller, which means we can just get through this a little bit quicker. So there was a severe vulnerability that affected multiple MongoDB versions dubbed Mongo Bleed. This allowed attackers to remotely extract secrets, credentials, and other data from an exposed MongoDB server, and this vulnerability was assigned a severity score of 8.7 and has been handled as a critical fix. So if you or anyone you know or a service you know is reliant on MongoDB for anything, you need to check this out. Now, there has already been some formal kind of publicity around this. CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency in the US, has ordered feds to patch Mongo Bleed flaw exploited in attacks. This exploit does seem to have many kind of repercussions, so I do expect to maybe cover some more people impacted by this in the coming weeks. So stay subscribed and maybe you'll get to learn more about those. There's something called a RondoDocs botnet that has been observed exploiting the critical React to Shell flaw. On a similar note, React to Shell is another one of these kind of more infrastructure-related vulnerabilities that we covered many weeks ago now, but we're still seeing it being exploited. And now there's an entire botnet that's targeting this exploit. So the botnet is targeting IoT exploitation, including Linksys, Wavelink, and other consumer and enterprise routers to enroll new bots. And then it's going to utilize your router to essentially start doing whatever they want to do with it, whether it's DDoS attacks or they want to attack other people. Whatever they're doing with that is, I guess, to be seen. Keep your devices up to date. And if you or anyone you know is using anything with React, please update it and get it patched. This one is pretty interesting. There's a new cybercrime tool called ERR Traffic, which automates click fix attacks by generating fake glitches on compromised websites to lure users into downloading payloads or following malicious instructions. Pretty much the idea here is a site will look like it's glitching out and get you to click in really unique ways, but really what's going on behind the scenes is it's getting you to download something, accept something, or do something. And if you're watching the video, you can kind of see what some of this looks like. like. It makes the page appear broken, and it creates a situation where your solution is, you know, installing a browser update, downloading a system font, or pasting something in the command prompt. Now, this happens on the site level. So theoretically, like if you run your own website, you should be locking it down and putting in proper protection so that this can't happen to your website. So this can happen to any website you visit on the internet. So all of you out there, if you're listening to this podcast, when you're visiting a website and it starts just glitching out and doing weird things, just know that this is a possibility of what's going on. So be careful. Staying in the browser, this one was also interesting. There was a newly uncovered Chinese threat group called Dark Spectre, and they've been linked to one of the most widespread browser extension malware operations to date that have compromised more than 8.8 million users of Chrome, Edge, Firefox, and Opera over the past 7 years. This research was done by Koi.ai, which is an organization that I think we cited either last week or the week before. And yes, they talked about this, how it was part of Shady Panda, Ghost Poster, and also one called the Zoom Stealer. So they've been doing a lot of good research in browser extensions lately. So this coverage is a bit of a summary of all of these. They do talk about the Shady Panda campaign. They also talk about the Ghost Poster, which spreads via Firefox and Opera extensions that conceal malicious payloads in PNG images. Then they also have the Zoom Stealer, which exposes 2.2 million users to corporate espionage. The overall takeaway from all of this research is please, please, please get only trusted extensions and have as few extensions as you can possibly have in your browser. Obviously, if you need an extension, use it, but get it from a trusted source. Always double check you're getting the right extension and don't use like sketchy third-party extensions in general. Like only get things from official organizations or companies. Data breaches. The European Space Agency has confirmed a breach of some of their external servers. This apparently contained unclassified information on collaborative engineering activities. The threat actor claimed they stole over 200 gigabytes of data after breaching the systems. But other than that, there isn't a huge amount of information. So we'll see if anything else comes to light in the coming weeks. I'm going to keep this one pretty brief. There's a sister publication for Wired, and it's called Condé Nast, I believe is how it's pronounced. Feel free to let me know how accurate that is in the comments. But they were breached, and there was 2.3 million user records that were caught in that. And I don't believe that impacted Wired subscribers, but it did impact those people. So if you were subscribed to this Condé Nast, then definitely check out the show notes so you can take proper precautions. Okay, this next one made the cryptocurrency rounds a bit, and it was Trust Wallet said that over 2,500 wallets were drained in a $7 million crypto theft attack. You might be wondering how this happened, and it's because these were compromised wallets after version 2.68.0 of its Chrome extension was compromised, with attackers adding a malicious JavaScript file that exfiltrated sensitive wallet data. Apparently, someone likely published externally through Chrome Web Store API keys, bypassing their standard release checks. How they got those is to be seen. This is quite scary because what it means is that if you just updated Trust Wallet, boom, your wallet could have just been drained like that. So over $7 million is gone. This is quite concerning. And they are apparently working around the clock to finalize the compensation process details. And each case requires careful verification to ensure accuracy and security. So if you were impacted by this, definitely stay in touch because, you probably want to get your money back. Korean Air had a data breach that exposed data of thousands of their employees. This impacted names, bank account numbers of their employees stored in their ERP system. They didn't say how many people, but a local news outlet reports that the attackers exfiltrated approximately 30,000 data records. And so if we go off of that report, then that is likely the number. So if you work for this organization and you listen to this podcast, definitely go check that out. There was a Romanian energy provider that was hit by Gentleman ransomware attack. I will say it actually seems like the response to this was pretty impressive. Some documents and files were encrypted and several computer applications became temporarily unavailable. But the company's activity was partially affected without jeopardizing the operation, which meant operations were still good. They're cooperating with authorities and making every effort to fully restore its IT systems. As soon as the attack was detected, its IT system started rebuilding the affected systems on a new infrastructure using existing backups. So they had backups ready to go. So yeah, this actually could have been a lot worse, but it sounds like they had some people who knew what they were doing back there. So major props to some of those people, because those aren't things that everybody has ready to go. All right, and this last data breach, man, I'm not a gamer, so I'm going to do my best here. There's a game called Rainbow Six Siege. And there was an exploit that flooded players with billions of credits and ban waves. So if you played this game, you probably already know this happened. And if you don't, then I guess this is just an interesting story, as it was for me. But apparently players logged in to find billions of R6 credits, thousands of alpha packs, and access to exclusive cosmetics, including developer and limited edition skins. So yeah, that was, I thought, to be the most interesting data breach of the week. Definitely unique. And I am now going to get into the updates. Also, not a huge number of updates this week, so we'll just get through them pretty quickly here. EOS, the custom ROM for Android, it's a fork of Lineage OS. It's supposed to be free from Google services, released version 3.3. This upgrades to Lineage OS 22.2 as the base. They introduce something called Account Manager, which includes OpenID Connect. The search function highlights up to 3 open source applications by default. And also Android Auto is now supported on systems running AOSP 15. There are some other changes like upgraded firmware for the Fairphone 5 and improvements for the Fairphone 6 and some other good things as well. So if you use EOS, there you go. F-Droid, this one's really quick, but F-Droid has a new server, which should be a lot faster and make your upgrades and updates and downloads a lot faster as well. And they talk about the story behind it on their blog. This one was pretty interesting. LibreOffice Viewer launched for the Meta Quest VR on Horizon OS. So now you can kind of use LibreOffice Viewer on Meta Quest. So I guess that's an option. Cosmic Desktop is a desktop environment for Linux, and it's now available for testing on Sparky Linux. This is still for testers only, so only use it if you're ready for some potential bugs. Open Media Vault 8 was released with Debian 13 base, AMD 64, and ARM 64 support only. Entei, the end-to-end encrypted photos provider, also put out some updates. They introduced something called Rituals, which is a way to like have habit forming and track your progress using photos. You can now do public links for anyone. You can tag people manually, and there's a lot of other quality of life upgrades. And they also tease some stuff for 2026. And that, my friends, concludes this week's TechLore Surveillance Report. If this analysis helped you or you enjoyed it, you can become a TechLorean and support this podcast by visiting the link in the show notes. We have one-off tip options. We have recurring monthly options. We have private signal group. We have perks. We have all these different things accessible to you all if you enjoy this podcast. The free ways to support the podcast include leaving a rating, sharing it with people you know, talking about some of these stories over the holidays, and just doing whatever you can to spread digital freedom to those around you. I want to thank you all for listening. I want to thank once again our sponsor, Easy Opt-Outs, and I'll see you in the next episode of Surveillance Report. Happy New Year, and hopefully 2026 has a lot of good news in the digital rights space.